Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the principal advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to discuss the upcoming fall benefits enrollment process that many of you who work for large employers will be going through soon. If you haven't received your email yet, you will be very soon, so be on the lookout for that. So this podcast is going to mention some common areas to look at, some benefits you should consider, and also update the values for the 2024 values that we go through. You can also reference my blog post, which will describe these. I don't have any particular graphs to look at, so other than referencing some of these numbers I'm going to rattle off, that'll be the helpful thing for my blog post this time for the podcast. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial or investment advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So I'm going to, again, the process, some of you may have received your emails already about the employee benefits enrollments. I did a podcast on this and a blog post last year as well, so this is just serve as a friendly reminder to make sure you look at it. I know some people look at it and dread seeing it. Other people look at it and say, yeah, and just kind of click through what they had from last year. And for you new hires, you may view this as a nice do-over, because when you first started working, you had to go through a bunch of benefits, and probably the last thing on your mind was trying to figure all this stuff out. So you do get the nice benefit of going through the process again, typically each fall for employees. And also as I'm going through these benefits, just as a quick side reminder on taxes, when I talk about if some of these benefits are tax deductible, the concept is whatever marginal tax bracket you're in, let's say you're in the federal of, say, 12%, and if you have state taxes at 5, that's a 17% tax marginal hit. And so if you have contributions that are deductible for $1,000, as an example, if you're in that 12% Fed and 5 state, that's a $170 benefit per $1,000 of contribution. If you're in the 22% plus the 5, it's worth $270. And finally, for those who are in the top tax bracket, you're talking 37% plus the 5. So for every $1,000 of contributions, we're talking $420 of current year savings. If you have to pay it later, that depends upon what we're talking about here. But anyway, it's worth paying attention given these tax benefits. So what are the typical benefits you can look at? So let's just go through each one of the major categories and some things to consider. The first one I add here is the 401k and 403b options. Now, some of you may be, well, actually, one point to make sure everybody is aware, you can always add contributions. You can change your contributions. You can change your investments. And so oftentimes I get questions from clients and they're not aware that you can change things throughout the year. So this is one where I'm bringing it up here for employee benefits enrollment to talk about if there's any new features. But I want to emphasize that changing the contribution amount that you save, even starting to begin saving, and obviously the investments you can do throughout the entire year. So the point of me bringing it up in today's podcast is take a look and see if your plan, your 401k or 403 plan, maybe they have new investment choices. Maybe they introduced a Roth 401k option this year. They definitely, over the last, say, 5 or 10 years, more and more companies have been introducing them. So maybe it's not, maybe most plans have it by now, but that's worth checking. And then also take a look and see a couple of other more subtle, not subtle, but non-standard benefits maybe related to this. Some plans will offer a 457. Oftentimes you'll see, I'll see those in people who work for education or hospitals or non-for-profits. So a 457 plan, very similar to a 401k, that you can contribute in addition to that, the same amounts. And so it's a very attractive benefit. And within the investments too, again, maybe you're well-versed in them and you can change things throughout the year, but it's always a good time to take a look at the investments you have in there. One of the things that back in, say, early 2000, 2001, when interest rates were very low, 401k plans are unique in that they have, many of them have stable value options. Those are very attractive when rates were low because they typically lagged the market, and so they were paying a higher rate relative to what you can get in the market. That thing has definitely flipped, and so current market rates, interest rates have risen a lot, and these stable value funds are kind of like a big battleship. They slowly turn, so they're always, you know, lagging to the upside, and then they're also a higher crediting rate coming to the downside. So if you have those and been looking at them, highly recommend taking a look at the crediting rate because it's very likely lagging current market rates. And as a quick reminder for contribution limits for 2024, so these are, again, next year, so as you're filling out your benefit enrollment, for 401k/403b, it went up from, it's going up to $23,000 contribution limit for the employee in 2024. If you are over age 50, that did not change. That's the additional $7,500, so that's not going up from the current year. So in total, $23,000 if you're under age 50, and then $30,500 age 50 and older. What else do we got here? Oh, and it's not related to employee benefits, but you guys might be wondering, well, what about individual IRAs, Kirk, or IRAs, which are individual retirement accounts? That is bumping up. It's $7,000 will be the amount if you're under age 50, and then again, the same $1,000 catch-up for those 50 and older. And one last thing, again, not really related to employee benefit enrollments, but I want to mention it here. The SECURE Act 2.0 passed in December of 2022, about a year ago. In there, the law is still there, so they say that for individuals who made more than $145,000 of income in the previous year from that same employer that they're at, starting in 2024, as the law is written, you are going to be forced to contribute any catch-up contributions to a Roth 401k. You couldn't do it to a traditional. The implementation has been waived until 2026. And so if you guys caught wind of that, just be aware that you can continue to do the catch-up contributions in 24 and 25 into the traditional if you want to. And then again, not the focus of this podcast, but just as a quick aside, again, if you do have that traditional and Roth, take a look at those options. In general, if you're in the lower tax bracket now versus what you expect to be in retirement, go ahead and use the Roth contribution. But if you're in the higher bracket, say 24% and higher, some may disagree on that and may want to wait till 32, but don't forget about the state tax deduction as well. So it's a gray area at that 24 zone. Think about it. Engage a professional with help if you need to, but take a look at that trade-off of a Roth versus a traditional. If you have questions, give me a call. The next topic or the next major benefit is health insurance. And so again, this is one where unique to each person or each family, I should say, people. So definitely take a look at it. Oftentimes, it's going to first and foremost be a focus on what are the doctors in the network. And so take a look at the options you have. In general, and again, I haven't been in the corporate world for about 15 years now, so maybe I'm assuming this still applies. But the PPOs where you have a lot more selection in the doctors, and then if they still have the HMOs or whatever they call them these days, there you could be more restrictive. So look at what your doctor selection is one thing. But then the other thing to look at, and again, many more plans offer this now, is what's called a high deductible health plan. And so it's eligible for HSAs, which I'll talk about next. But with these high deductible plans, the trade-off is basically the first X dollars that you incur in medical expenses, you have to pay those. And so the traditional plans from 10 years ago, maybe it was $200, maybe it was $500. You had to pay that amount. But once you got over that, you just ran to the doctor whenever you want because insurance paid for it. And then the premiums were quite high because utilization was quite high. With a high deductible plan, the concept is they make you pay the first $2,000 or $5,000. So you definitely are on the hook for the first dollar amount, but you're much more aware of what true costs are, and you'll utilize them more appropriately or maybe more judiciously or prudently. So, and with that, because you are paying more of the expenses out of pocket and likely lowering utilization overall, the premiums for that protection above those amounts are going to be much lower. So I guess stepping back, the broad trade-off is a low deductible plan, high premiums, low risk. So take a look at that and see if that fits your medical utilization expectations versus a high deductible plan. You got to pay the first $2,000, $5,000, but your monthly premiums will be much, much lower. So it's that trade-off of premiums versus how much you pay out of pocket. And then related to that, so if you engage in that plan, so you have to have a high deductible plan, and then if you do that, you are allowed to utilize what's called a health savings account. It's not an FSA. I'll talk about that next, but this is a HSA or a health savings account. And with that, you're allowed, think of it as a medical IRA. So you are allowed to contribute pre-tax dollars into this plan. And then you get a deduction going in, it grows tax-free. And if you take it out for medical expense, qualified medical expenses, it's also tax-free. So it's actually the only, I call it the only triple play tax, only triple tax play in the tax code, where you get those deductions, deferrals, and it comes out all tax-free, provided that you use it for medical expenses. So again, you got to have the high deductible health plan underneath it to utilize this. Contributions amount, these are 2024 numbers. For an individual, it's $4,150, and for a family, it's $8,300 per year of contribution. If you are over age 55, so not age 50, but age 55, they have a catch-up contribution of $1,000. So that's a nice thing to look at. They got some rules for what qualifies for a high deductible plan, but I'll let you guys read that or ask your employer if it's an HDHP. I'll spare you the details for now. But the other thing too, I guess, with the HSA, before I jump next, is it's there to use for qualified medical expenses if you want to, but you don't have to. So it is definitely not a use it or lose it plan. You put money in, and you can, if you don't have medical expenses, you can just let it grow year over year over year. Even if you have medical expenses, you're not required to take the money out of there. So ideally, again, if a person can, the best strategy is to pay any out-of-pocket medical costs with your checking account, taxable accounts, and just let this thing grow and grow and grow. And then later in life, when your medical expenses are typically higher, you can tap it then. So that's a strategy to consider. You do not have to utilize it, but you get some beautiful tax benefits going in when you do. The next topic, related, very similar sounding name, but very different. And that is a health flexible spending account, or FSA. So the key difference here versus what I just described is these are use it or lose it. You put money into these plans, you get a deduction, you can take it out for qualified expenses, but whatever you put in for the year, say 2024, whatever you put in, if you don't utilize that by the end of the year, and they allow you to carry over for 2024, it's going to be $640. But if you don't use it, it's gone. You lose it. So people typically are scared of these historically because it is that use it or lose it feature, and they get a bit confused by the HSA. So just be aware of what type it is. These have definitely much lower contribution limits. So in 2024, the most you can put in is $3,200, a tax deductible amount. But again, if you do that full amount, great for tax benefit. You have to make sure you're going to incur out-of-pocket medical expenses of $3,200 in 2024. Because if you don't think it's going to be that high, then don't put in that amount. Related to these FSA, the flexible spending accounts for healthcare, they also have them for dependent care. So if you got kids, similar concept, you put it in, use it or lose it. $5,000 is the most you can put in for a family. It looks like $2,500 for a single individual, but and that is the same as 2023. So those are 2024 numbers, same as 2023. So it is it's worthwhile. So definitely, if $5,000, I imagine dependent care costs are quite high. So again, if you're in that 22% federal bracket and 5% state, if you max that out, that's a $1,350 tax savings right there. So definitely, if you have children and having these eligible expenses, check the rules. It's definitely worthwhile utilizing that plan if you need it. Jumping to another major section in your health benefit or your employee benefit options is something called disability insurance. Oftentimes I'll come across this with clients and they don't have it, and I highly recommend having it. So what is disability insurance? Maybe for starters, you may be familiar with those Aflac commercials, with those ducks quacking around and who's going to pay the bills if you're hurt. Those plans are referring to short-term disability plans. So, those are important. They'll cover the bills for short-term disabilities. But my main focus here is something called long-term disability insurance. And that covers typically if you're going to be not able to work for, say, 3 months or longer. I think this is very important coverage. I highly recommend people get it. During your working years, the chance of being disabled is greater than and dying. But oftentimes, people don't think twice about getting life insurance because of this big bad risk, but they ignore disability insurance. So the idea is, if you are disabled and you're not able to work, and again, don't think about it just as an injury that you can't, walk to work or something, or if you're doing a desk job, maybe you think it'll never happen, but also don't forget about any illness, if you have, God forbid, cancer or other illnesses that knock you out for a while. So disability insurance, it covers, it provides income to you if you're not able to work for a period of time. So typically, the coverage will cover maybe 60 or 67% of your salary. That might be have a cap on it per month. And the deductible concept, it's not a dollar amount necessarily, but you have to be disabled for at least 3 months before the coverage kicks in. So it's definitely something to look at sign up for it. Or oftentimes, the employer may pay for it as well. So definitely check it out. Another one that you're going to see offered is life insurance. And this is one probably just the opposite of disability. Life insurance, you may get one or two times salary paid by the employer, and that's great. So obviously take that because it's paid for. And they're going to give you the option most of the times to purchase additional insurance if you want to. In general, as long as you're reasonably healthy, you're likely going to find better rates by shopping outside of the company. So, but if a person has health concerns or past medical history, it's very convenient. You just sign up, and oftentimes they'll let you go up to maybe two or three times your salary in addition to what the employer provides. So it's a convenient option, but it's also an expensive one just because they assume that people who do utilize this may have health issues because they don't do any underwriting, and so they have to price it accordingly. The other thing to be aware of, and I was helping a client recently comparing, because they were purchasing the insurance through work, and I reminded them that you likely can get some better rates elsewhere. So we were looking at 10 and 20-year term quotes, and those are level quotes for coverage. And on a per $1,000 coverage of life insurance, what they were looking at on their pay stub was actually cheaper. So it's like, wait a minute, Kirk, I thought you said it's going to be more expensive at the employer. Well, one thing to be aware of is the rate you're seeing from your employer, those are annual term quotes, and they go up each year with age. Whereas a 10-year or a 20-year level term quote, those are premiums that are locked in on level for the next 10 or 20 years. So the first X years, your real cost is going to be lower, and then the later years, as you age, the quotes, the term cost goes up. So don't be fooled by the fact that your first 1 year quote from your employer is going to be lower likely than your term quotes, but that's because that 1 year quote from the employer is going to keep going up each year versus being locked in. And then finally, I guess the other benefits, the catch-all here, you're going to have vision insurance, dental insurance, wellness benefits, might have legal advice, commuter cost reimbursement for those who are working. Hopefully, the back to work get things rolling again for cities. Education reimbursement. Sometimes the I don't know how many have that, but talk about or benefits related to student loan repayments, and maybe the employer kicking in some or utilizing some of the 401k contribution to direct for student loans. So that's been a hotter topic of late. So it's worth looking at. To see if that benefit is offered. So that is a quick summary. Again, looking at the employee benefit enrollment. Again, don't just look at last year's benefits and click on the same thing and run with it. Take the time and look at what benefits are offered. And even if they're the same, take a look at your current personal situation. See if anything has changed. Maybe you have a better understanding of something. and make the appropriate benefit changes that fit the needs that you and your family need. So that is my summary of the annual employee benefit enrollments. You likely have it by now or will very soon. So make sure you watch the deadlines. Click those buttons before the deadline hits you. All right, that's a wrap on today's topic. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.